Welcome to The Jewish Diasporist, a podcast exploring the political, social, and cultural implications of life in diaspora. We are two of your hosts, Ben Yanowitz
and Jordan Yanowitz. Today we are talking about a Jewish institution that lies near and dear to both our hearts, a summer camp that played a big role in shaping our Jewish identities, URJ Camp Newman.
Like many sleepaway camps, Newman serves as a sort of Jewish bubble in diaspora, providing a space for young Jews to explore their identities and grow as people within a vibrant Jewish community.
Newman is part of the Union for Reform Judaism, the URJ, which is the largest Jewish religious institution in the United States. Through this affiliation, camp acts as a sort of microcosm for many of the tensions between the policies of the URJ and the changing, growing, and questioning Jewish people they seek to contain.
While Jordan and I both grew up attending Newman as campers, we also went on to work there as staff. While working, we both independently engaged with and sought to develop the non-Zionist current which emerges organically from this diasporic community. In this episode, we spoke to Danny and Ezra, two of the campers, both staffed this past summer, that I had the privilege of working with while serving as a CIT advisor in 2021.
To support grassroots diasporist media like this, please follow us on Instagram at the Jewish Diasporist Pod, subscribe to our collective on YouTube, the Hamotzi Network, and share our conversations and media with your friends and community.
In addition, please consider supporting us on Patreon for as little as just $1 per month. We have recently updated our Patreon page with new supporter tiers, as we need donors if we are to keep this show going for the long term. If we get just a single supporter for $50 a month, not only will we be much closer to our show's financial sustainability, but we will also start a monthly book club for all of our patrons. Regardless of what you can contribute, we appreciate everyone who helps make the show possible.
Without further ado, we hope you enjoy this conversation.
Hey everyone, just before you get to Ben and Jordan, I wanted to shout out a very cool initiative that a good friend told me about, hashtag not sponsored. Queer Yiddish Camp is a 2-week online Yiddish intensive for all levels, November 3rd to 17th. You can take language, literature, dance, history, and culture classes from an all-queer faculty of world-renowned Yiddish teachers, scholars, artists, activists, and cultural workers. What's important is that registration closes September 30th. That's very, very soon, so don't delay. You'll find a link in the description.
It's up to us to call ourselves to task, to sing what's good and true, to bring about redemption. It's what we were freed to do. For what's the point of being here if we're not moved to change our ways? Aleinu l'shabeach, it's time to live our praise.
Danny, Ezra, it's absolutely wonderful to sit down with you guys and talk about our experience growing up at URJ Camp Newman. This is a camp that's tied to the URJ, the Union of Reform Judaism, of which I grew up in a synagogue tied to that as well. But for you guys as well as for me, camp played a really instrumental role in the development of my Jewish identity, the values that I associate with that, and the sort of just like community-centered value of how I understand Jewishness, I'd say came really directly out of my experiences growing up here. So Ezra, Danny, I'd love if each of you would just kind of say a little bit about your experience growing up with camp and how it relates to your own understanding of what it means for you to be Jewish.
I've been growing up at camp for my entire life, quite literally since I was a baby. And camp has always served this really awesome, like almost like a third space in my Judaism. My dad's a rabbi and I grew up with this like definitely a connection to synagogue life, but always I experienced it more as the son of the rabbi as opposed to my own person. And camp really gave me the opportunity to experience and explore Judaism really on my own terms. And that taught me a lot of really important lessons that I would absolutely not have extrapolated from a different Jewish upbringing. I mean, it really taught me what it means to be in holy community with Jews and how to pursue everything we do in our lives through a Jewish lens, which is so powerful. And it also, importantly, it gave me a space that was kind of devoid of the stressors of being a Jew in the outside world. I didn't really have to worry about dealing with anti-Semitism. I didn't even really have to deal with worrying about a lot of issues within the internal Jewish community. In many ways, it was almost like a Jewish oasis for me. And it was extremely formative in helping me identify my Judaism with really concrete things like tefillah or art or music, or just being with other Jews. So, I mean, yeah, the value of camp in my Jewish journey, I would not be the person or the Jew I am without it. 1000%.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of stuff Ezra just said. I have been going to camp for like as long as a standard camper can. All of my cousins on my mom's side before me also went to Newman, and my mom grew up at a different Jewish summer camp, so kind of runs in the family. I think I was not connected to Judaism as a religion, like really hardly at all, until I was older at camp. And I don't think that I ever would have found that if not for camp. Like, my synagogue's pretty great and there's like a very strong teen education program, but like my bat mitzvah was just like something to check off on a list. And as soon as it was done, I stopped going to the educational programs. I was like, I finished my job here, like peace out. And the only thing that brought me back to like the more religious and like textual pieces of Judaism was camp. I like have a lot of Jewish culture through my family, but like camp gave me all of my Jewish friends, and like taught me how to explore, and that like exploration is a part of Judaism. And I agree with Ezra, it's kind of like a Jewish oasis. Like, I don't have to explain myself or explain what words I'm using or anything to the people there. They understand. And camp has been extremely formative in who I am as a person and as a Jew, like Ezra said.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something about a sleepaway camp in particular, about living in community with people literally every day for every hour. I mean, you get a sort of bond with these people in a way that I don't think you even get in like school or in most places. It's absolutely, I think, a third space, as Ezra said. It's almost like, I mean, it's a bubble. We often say it's a camp bubble, but it's almost like another world entirely, because it's like, this is a Jewish world nestled somewhere in California that you just, you don't have access to. Most people don't even realize a place like this can exist, but it's absolutely, as you say, an oasis. Jordan, do you want to answer that question as well?
Sure. Well, I've been going to camp as long as Ben here. We first went when we were 10 years old, and we went pretty much every summer until we were 17, 18. And that was a really important place for me growing up. And just for some context, Camp Newman burned down in 2017, and that really hurt me. But getting to go back 2 summers ago, I was Rosh Teva, the nature programming director, in 2023, and getting to really help campers who, this is the first summer people were coming back, and seeing all that has grown back since the fire.
It was not the first summer people were coming back.
It was the first summer at the overnight site, though.
Okay.
Yeah. And getting to see just how much had grown back, and just how much that restoration. Well, 2022 was the first time that people came back.
To the overnight,
but yes. 2023 was the first time I came back.
Yeah.
And the first time I had worked at Camp Newman since I was an 18-year-old who was not on site. We were out at another place near the water. And getting to go back and see that land that had shaped my childhood, shaped me as a human being, and my understanding of what it means to be in community. And then getting to pass that on to the next generation of young Jews is such a, that was such an informative moment for me. I think getting tossed into, this is now the metaphorical fire of having to plan a big overnight program in like 5 days that was spiritually meaningful, but also ecologically grounded, really helped me conceptualize myself as a Jew and an ecologist. And back in 2018, I was a counselor, a regular general counselor, which is probably the hardest job on camp. You are looking after kids 23 hours a day, 6 days a week. Danny was one of my campers, actually, back in Maccabia. And I, we did some running, sports programming, and getting to see those kids grow up and turn into really wonderful adult human beings. It's just such a transformative experience. And I feel like that's really what the value of camp is, to grow up in community and to cultivate this sense of belonging and responsibility for ourselves and for each other. I think it was just a really important place for me in learning what it means to be not just Jewish, but to be a human being. And so for that, I'm forever grateful.
Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't go to camp in 2017 because I actually did what was a different URJ program, which was a semester in Israel that was also very formative in a very different roundabout way in terms of the way that I unlearned a lot of the propaganda narratives I was taught and really wrestled with those alongside a lot of the other people that I was on the program with, who many of which I had met at camp because there was a number of us who were at that and several came back. But I will say, having not been at camp in 2017, and then a few months later after the end of the summer session that year, camp burned down, it was really hard because I felt like I had missed my last opportunity to be in that place prior to the destruction that came to it. And that actually is one of the big reasons why I came back in 2021, because ultimately I feel a really close sense to that land. And being able to see the way it has been reshaped by the fires and by the measures that people are required to take to, like, creating fire breaks and stuff to fireproof the camp for the future, which really dramatically reshaped the land in its own right, was really instrumental. And as much as I love the place, and that's one of the big things that brought me back there, I mean, I mentioned propaganda narratives. I mean, it is both a place that we can feel directly attached to, both for the place and the community that it holds, but also a place that we might have a difficult relationship with. Because in 2021, this was the first summer back at camp after the fire. And it was also the only summer without Israeli staff, which was a really significant shift because it meant that we had a lot more possibilities of programming, and I'd say actually the culture was really wonderful. I was wondering if you guys could say a little bit about the sort of narratives and the sort of attachment to Israel that camp has pushed historically, and maybe a little bit about how that kind of contradicts with the whole welcome home messaging that they give when you enter the space at the start of a new session.
I think camp's gone through a lot of different eras when it comes to how they pursue conversations about Israel. I remember programs at camp done on Yom Israel, their like Israel celebration day, that were quite critical of Israel. I remember doing a program talked about the dangers of pinkwashing. I remember doing a program where we sat down, just looked at the evolving map of Israel from, say, the British Mandate in the early 20th century.
I'm getting that this was under Josh Berg's leadership, who we interviewed for episode 6 of our episode of our podcast as well. Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, Josh Berg did an awesome program where it was 2019, I was 15 years old, where we just looked at Israel's evolving map. And his message wasn't, Israel took this land. It was, listen, there was once a semi-equal division of land and now there's not. Something had to have happened. What was that thing? And it was just a really powerful framing, and it was a refreshing framing. I think that, listen, camp is a Jewish organization. They're a Jewish institution. They're a reform institution. There's so many pieces at play that are way larger than camp that control and dictate and influence how camp talks about Israel. That's just kind of an aspect of, mainstream reform Jewish life in the diaspora, is that there's a lot of these organizations up top that are kind of helping to corral messages down below. It's not so much that I have an issue with, it's the lack of, willingness to have open, fact-based, nuanced, complicated dialogue that has been kind of more disappointing for me. But there's also a lot of aspects of programming related to Israel that I have, in after maturing a little bit and growing up, especially now being on the other side of camp and working for camp, that I find like quite problematic. There were programs that we did where we were simulating like IDF drills and, stuff like that. And listen, like there's a way to healthily talk about Israel, but we don't need to be doing fake military trainings for 13-year-olds. There's other ways to talk about this country and this land that's removed from that inherently like militarized aspect of it. I think that's a big piece that there has been improvement on, but there's still a lot of ground to make up.
Yeah, I remember those pozatsta. Everyone would have to go to the ground, and people were traumatized by that programming. I was maybe 14 at the time, and that was an overnight program. And so everyone was, they did gendered overnights back then. And so it was like a chance for the guys to feel manly and whatnot. And it was not a positive experience. It might have been memorable, but people were really made uncomfortable by those programs. And that was something that I took really to heart when I was planning my overnight programs, because I didn't want to trauma bond kids. I feel like a connection to nature is what I wanted to cultivate. And that's something that camp really provides. It's a small little, almost feeling like a village nestled in these beautiful mountains and forests. And that's what a nature program should be about, rather than like getting dirty and bonding just with each other. And so that was something that I was really avoiding when I was planning my nature programs. And I'm not sure if they still do any of that kind of programming, because there's definitely an awareness now to that trauma bonding is bad, and that people feel safe and loved when the programs are focused on, the wonderful place and community we're cultivating, not just, kind of these more superficial attachments to military training and, glorifying military aesthetics.
Yeah. Would you like to add something, Danny?
Yeah, I remember Pozatsta. I remember the like IDF simulation, and I remember the years where it was more discussion based and they talked about pink washing and things like that. And then obviously, Ben, I remember the program that you ran for us, which in the year that there was no Israeli staff, Ben and the rest of the team who was Ezra and I's counselors, ran us a really interesting Israel program that was just a timeline. It was two parts. It was first like an investigation into like what is propaganda, and then the second part was a historical timeline. And I think all of those were influential in different ways. It's been interesting because, in a sense, the programming conveniently kind of shifted with my views for a while, but then backed up. So like when I was younger, like I also grew up at a URJ synagogue, so I was receiving the same messaging from camp and temple and my family. And so I never had anything to question. I was always like, yay, Israel, like we're connected to this place and there's nothing else to hear about it, and we're not going to learn anything specific and how it got there and anything. And then as I got a little bit older, I also was a camper of Josh Berg, and he also presented a different perspective to me. And there was no sense of like trying to persuade us. It was just like, here's a different way to think. And I was like, that's really interesting. I didn't know that there was different ways to think. And that was the year that our programming was more discussion based. And then I got a little bit older, questioned a lot more, and then I had Ben as my counselor, and then that really was eye-opening. And so that trajectory kind of like helped me learn a lot about what my views were. And then it's been really interesting as a staff member, like especially this year, because it's been a little bit all over the place, like what we teach the kids, if that makes sense. And so like something fascinating about this particular year was camp knew that it was going to be like a hot subject going into this year. And during staff week, we actually did a program that I thought was really amazing. That was like discussion based, and they mixed up mishlachot, which are Israeli staff members, with American staff members and all the other staff members like all together. And we read a bunch of different perspectives from different staff, and they really did diversify the perspectives like beyond what the URJ like official line is, which I was impressed by that. And I thought that was a great program, but people's experiences varied vastly throughout it. It like seems like I kind of struck gold with the group that I was assigned to. And then I had the oldest campers, and I was like, well, if there's any opportunity to recreate this program for kids, it would be with my kids because they're about to be staff. And it never happened. Like, we weren't able to recreate that for kids. And so it was just like, okay, well, like, you've obviously put thought and time and care into this programming for some of us, but we're not allowed to bring that to the kids. So yeah, it's just interesting.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I'm glad they did do a staff program like that. It actually makes me feel kind of vindicated for the very overt organizing we were trying to do in 2022, where we organized something somewhat like that during staff week ourselves. And camp, the directors kind of let us do that because they didn't want to be seen as stopping us from having these conversations, I think. But also kind of taking a couple steps back, you mentioned Pazatsta. And I don't know, Danny, did you do URJ Heller High?
No.
No, okay. Because when I did the Semester in Israel program, which was organized by the URJ, we did this literally IDF training program called Gadna. Gadna was a week at an Israeli army base where they were just like giving us a little taste of boot camp and stuff. So think about like the type of programming that they were doing at camp, the sort of boot camp programming, but like on steroids on a literal army base and with guns. And we did that same thing, Pazatsta, which makes me really think that that's not just like a little game they're playing. That is literally IDF programming that the Israeli staff are bringing to camp, which I think really says something about the role that Israeli staff see themselves having at camp, which, to be fair, a lot of the Israeli staff really, they're like just recently out of the army. They really just want to have a chill summer with their friends. So frankly, from a perspective of someone that was a Rosh Eidah, a unit head, let's just say they weren't the most amazing staff as like camp people that are making camp happen. They had their own priorities. But one of those priorities was, sadly, to make sure that their perspective is very loudly heard. And in summer 2021, there wasn't that perspective because we were still dealing with COVID, so they didn't have any international staff. And frankly, I mean, if you people hadn't picked up on it by now, I was a CIT advisor. I was working with Ezra and Danny here, and you guys were CITs that year. And I'm going to say some stuff that maybe I shouldn't, because there might be people from camp listening here that are like, that might get some bad ideas about clamping down harder. But we had some pretty lax oversight over the programming we were able to do. Our director was really wonderful and aligned politically and was like, you want to do programming like this? Go ahead. And he was like, actually, the first program, Danny, that you mentioned, which was like more of like unpacking what we'd learned, thinking about the narratives that are pushed on us in these environments traditionally, that was something that he was like, I want to start with something like that. And that was something that emerged. We wrote it in like a day between a few of us. And frankly, we started it by like watching a Birthright promotional video and then unpacking how it used certain propaganda techniques to push a certain narrative. And then we did a lot of journaling and just discussion. And I mean, Danny, there was one thing you said in that conversation that stuck with me ever since, which was that, to paraphrase, you said, I can feel a huge divide between where me and my peers stand on this issue and where my parents and their generation does. And that's something that like I have known is like a case. There is a generational divide around young Jews feeling a lot more critical of Israel at the very least. But like hearing it from your voice, hearing it from you was like, okay, this is wonderful. I'm really deeply grateful that we've been able to have that space at camp, because it does kind of subvert the typical paradigm that they push. And then, yeah, we did a timeline program where, I mean, I ended up spending like way too many hours on that program getting down the demographics so I could understand how the demographics had changed over time between 1917 and today, and how people had been divided by the Green Line and the Gaza border fence and stuff like that. And that was, I would say, sadly, an exception to the rule, because it seems like in the years since, in 2022, we were intentionally organizing. We did some stuff. Josh Berg played a role there. I was really grateful to have you guys there as staff, and we were trying to organize stuff, and then I got bogged down by the chaos of being in charge of 85, 13, and 14-year-olds. But it was just very interesting to see how things have changed since then, how camp reacted to that, and where things are going now. Because the way I've kind of seen camp at this point is, like, as I mentioned, there's kind of a contradiction there where they say, welcome home when you enter camp. And they're like, this is the largest piece of Jewish-owned land on the West Coast or something like that. And I was wondering how you might see this relating to each other, because for me, there seems to be a contradiction there. I was wondering if you see that, or if there is a contradiction, or how camp kind of wrestles with that, and kind of what that looked like in the last couple years with campers, because obviously things are changing.
I think that camp's welcome home message was like one of the first or one of the most prominent things that made me start to question what I had been told about Israel, because like you said, Ben, like, it had been instilled in me that camp is my home, and like, I have very, very strong connections to like the part of the Bay Area where I grew up. There's a lot of like Judaism there for me. Like, all my mom's family, who is my Jewish side of the family, we're all from California. We grew up very close. So I was always like, I mean, I still will probably until I die feel like California is my home, and it always will be. And that's where my people are, and that's where camp is, and like all of this. And so then to be expected to rally very strongly for a country very far away. And I know many Jewish people have a lot stronger and more like tangible connections to Israel than I do. Like, it just so happens that I'm not like very connected to Israel in an emotional sense. But anyway, to be expected by my institutions to kind of go down swinging for this country, I was like, I see where you guys are coming from, but my home is here. And like, that was one of the first like places of confusion for me. And that was really interesting this summer, because I saw that contradiction in my campers. Because like I said, I had the oldest kids, I had the CITs this summer, and they're very aware and they're very on it and they're sharp and they're smart. And I wasn't allowed technically to speak with them about Israel. So I did my best to not speak my mind, but they would walk up to us. Yeah.
I was just going to pull back a little bit, because I don't want to interrupt you too much, because I think that's a really important thread to be pulling on. But what do you mean that you weren't allowed to talk with them about this? Like, what was the policy that was put in place there?
The camp policy was to create a space that was like above the political situation of the world, and to like preserve like a kind of a bubble of non-politicalness, if that makes sense. And I do see the value in that. I see why that's what they were going for. And they gave us like a toolkit to like, for when they knew kids would come and talk to us about it. And they gave us a toolkit for that. The problem was that the toolkit was largely redirects. And when you have very sharp 17-year-olds, that doesn't work. And so, yeah, they would come up to me and talk about their feelings about everything that was going on. And it was just kind of like a smile and nod, smile and wave situation. But they would say things like what I was just talking about how like, my home isn't there, my home is here. And so like, I think that contradiction, I felt that very strongly. And I think that has continued to ricochet down like generations of campers.
Yeah. Just for context, I was working with 16-year-olds. They were 1 year younger than Danny's kids. And these two kids are kind of like in a transition phase at camp. They're there for 2 months. They're kind of graduated from being like just campers. They have more responsibilities and duties, but they are still campers, like legally and fundamentally. Just for context about where I was coming from, I found that camp's desire to have us deflect might have worked for younger campers, but there really wasn't a plan in place for what Danny was talking about when they keep asking you. And it put me at least in a really tough position where I wanted to be able to speak my mind, because I'm 4 years older than these kids. In my eyes, yes, they're kids, but they're young adults, basically. And importantly, for the first time since the war started and for the first time since camp last summer, they were outside of their parents' earshot. They could say whatever they wanted to say. They did not feel, you know, bogged down with their parents' views or their synagogue's views or their school's views. And I thought that was a really awesome opportunity. But, you know, that wasn't the direction that camp went in. I think, though, for me, I actually don't have any issues with that policy of deflection in the name of apoliticalness, so long as camp actually remains apolitical. And in my opinion, that didn't really happen this summer. To camp's credit, there was an opt-in policy for all Israel programming for campers. So campers that were 16 and 17 years old, at least, I don't know about any other age group, they did not ever have to participate in Israel programming. And that is something that I will give camp a lot of credit for. That is objectively a good policy. And even when there was all camp programming, my campers, we didn't really do that programming. We did our own programming. But there was this opportunity to frame Judaism in a really positive way, to reframe our connection to homeland in a really positive way that didn't have anything to do with a country, that didn't have anything to do with the politics of a country. There was this golden opportunity, in my opinion, for us to be Jews for the sake of being Jews and for our love of each other and our texts and our traditions and our culture, and not for our love of another country or a political idea. And there was just a lot of gray area there. There was a lot of back and forth, in my opinion. But yeah, I think that I feel the same way as Danny. Like, camp was, it continues to hold a special place in my heart as a form of my home. And I think that if we just, everyone took us, you know, two steps back and said, well, what are we trying to preach in terms of this relationship with Israel? We want to have a place where Jews are safe, where Jews can live Jewishly in any way they want to without fear of persecution, which also isn't really happening in Israel, because the far right is ridiculously anti-reform and conservative Jew. They're also extremely homophobic. Like, Jews in Israel, not all Jews in Israel are even able to live their full lives as Jews in Israel. But also, you know, you want to feel accepted and you want to feel comfortable. All of that's happening at camp, arguably better than in Israel. We do accept everyone regardless of their background. We do love everyone regardless of how they feel or how they think. And there was an opportunity, I think, to really speak to the unity of Jewish people, and the strength of Jewish people, that was founded on a basis of being Jewish, not being pro-Israel. And there was, you know, just some areas that I think that camp fell a little bit short, to be honest. But again, you know, no one was making these campers go to these Israel programs. And that, I think having that autonomy for these kids was really empowering and really a really good decision made by camp.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that there was some like silver lining on the policy, because I remember first hearing about it and being like, holy shit, that is like, that is censorship of what their staff are able to say in a way that is completely new for camp. I mean, obviously they don't love it when a lot of these conversations happen without any of way for them to kind of police them, because that's the kind of reality. I mean, I remember, I don't know if I should say this, Ezra, but I just remember one time you and one other person were like flirting late at night, but you were flirting by talking about Israel-Palestine. And I just... And I was like, that's my boy right here. Not nice. I was like so proud of you for that. But like, it's interesting to think about like the idea of what it means for there to be an apolitical Jewish space right now, because that's something that like I was working at a day camp out of my synagogue this summer, and that was something we were very clear on. We were like, this is a camp. It was a day camp for ages. The campers are age 6 to 12, and then there's CITs that are 13 or 14. So it's younger demographic. We're like, we want this to be apolitical because it's about childhood innocence and just having a good time. Which frankly, like, yeah, especially for a camp like this, you want that to be the case. But then I was thinking, like, what does it mean for this to be apolitical when in one of our classrooms there's a picture of what they called the State of Israel that doesn't even include dotted lines around the occupied territories?
Just for the record, the URJ has for many years been officially against the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza.
It was a map from the Jewish National Fund. And you know what I did? I took it down. I said, that's not apolitical right here. I took it down. There was a poster of Theodore Herzl. I said, that's really not apolitical. I'm going to take that down. And it's interesting to sort of think about like what it actually means for a Jewish space to be apolitical right now, because frankly there's not a lot of Jewish spaces that are apolitical. But it does mean you have to like, you have to recognize that Zionism is not intrinsically part of Judaism, and if you're trying to be apolitical, you have to get rid of the Zionism as well.
I think there's I mean, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, but I think that mean, when I was working at camp this summer, I had a lot of big ideas about what I wanted to do in terms of Israel programming. And I remember, like Ben was kind of talking about when he was a Rosh in 2022, shit hit the fan. It's camp. Not actually. Like everything was fine. It was normal camp stuff. We got busy. We got tired. We didn't have the same capacity we once did. And I kind of like was thinking about my desire to do this Israel programming, and I realized, wait a second, I'm leading really engaging and meaningful tefillot services for at least an hour every day. I'm teaching my campers about Heschel and Shabbat and how to have arguments for the sake of heaven for an hour every single day. We were doing work blocks or pride programming or planning tefillot or learning how to be song leaders and leaders at camp for 3, 4 hours a day. I had kind of, inadvertently, but for very, in a really good way, kind of subverted the need to talk about Israel at all because I had helped create this community that was Jewish because they loved being Jewish. And I think that's kind of the end goal of some of this Israel programming intended to unlearn some things, is to get to a point where Jews can be Jews, with no ifs, ands, or buts about it and no connection to political identity. But I also think that I think the big thing that camp does is unfortunately conflate, and this is also the URJ and just a lot of Jewish organizations. It's not fair to call this a camp specific issue, as there's a conflation absolutely between Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, and the state of Israel. List personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with having a connection to the land of Israel. I don't think I've been to Israel twice. I'd be lying if I said that I don't feel anything when I'm standing at the Kotel, at the Western Wall. Obviously, there's feelings of why is the men's section bigger than the women's section and why can't they read Torah? That's a whole other conversation. But I don't think there's anything wrong with having a connection to the land. But that connection to the land cannot be misconstrued as a connection to the state. Land is land. History is history. That's not political. What's political is, like you said, Zionism, an inherently secular Judeo-political movement. And I think that's an area that I'd like to see camp kind of reassess how they approach Israel programming. Is this, do we want the kids to have a connection to the state, or do we want them to have a connection to the land? And how can we draw really firm lines in the sand about what each of those things is and is not?
Yeah, I think that really speaks to like the programming that Josh Berg ran about like, hey, this is the way that the land has been conquered and divided, which I believe is the name of the B'Tselem tool that he used for that program. And then we'll probably put a link in the description because I think it's a really, really
Fantastic tool.
wonderful tool that B'Tselem has that really is really important to visualize the way that the West Bank has been turned into Swiss cheese.
I just want to add on, I do think it's official URJ policy to cultivate a love and sense of solidarity with Israel. And when they say Israel, there's no nuance. As Ezra was already alluding to, Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael, the land of Israel and the state of Israel, are not one and the same thing. But even more so, there's the story of Jacob, the story of Yisrael, of struggling with God. And when I actually approached the leadership at Camp Newman when I was working there 2 summers ago and mentioned this, like maybe we should not just talk about Israel as a land or a state, but as a biblical idea. And every 2 weeks that summer, they did a Yom Israel, an Israel day that the mishlachat, the Israeli staff, were given basically full control on what they were doing that day. And I was saying, like, can we have non-Israeli staff also lead programming for this? And can we try to make space for this more nuanced discussion of what does it mean to be Yisrael, to be part of the people of Israel? Because you can be part of the people of Israel without having a connection to the land of Israel, if you are struggling with God. And the rabbi was like, yeah, that's great. Let's think about it. And then that was the end of it. So I feel like the URGA just policy of cultivating a love and solidarity with Israel gets in the way of actually having these more deeper spiritual conversations that are apolitical, genuinely apolitical, rather than, trying to create a sense of international Jewish community, which is really just American Jews connecting to Israeli Jews. And then there's the whole other fact that Camp Newman is not just Israeli staff and American staff and campers, of course, but also there's lots of other international staff. many of which aren't Jewish, and they don't really get a chance to bring their own cultural identities and, you know, dare I say, religious identities into camp, because camp is a Jewish space. And I think that's, and I've seen it, it's pretty hard for a lot of those non-Jewish, especially, but also just multicultural staff there that don't feel like they necessarily have a place there besides their paycheck. And that's been pretty hard to see.
Just to, in the name of fairness, I just want to, this year camp actually did a much better job, I would say, of incorporating counselors into their Yom Israel program. They actually rebranded it to be, what was it called? Yom Am Yisrael? Was that what they were calling it, Danny?
I think so, yeah.
And, you know, that's not to say that it was completely unproblematic. I think that there were many aspects that were, but, you know, there were British Jews who got the floor to talk about British Judaism, and there were Ugandan Jews who had the floor to talk about Ugandan Judaism. So there was, I would say it was a really good first step, but a first of many needed steps. Just to provide a little follow-up to that, Jordan.
Yeah. And I just want to add one other thing. Sion, who we had on for an interview at some point last summer, or 2 summers ago, he mentioned when we were talking about Yom Israel, like, what if we had a Yom Olam or Yom Teva,
yeah,
where we just focus on letting, you know, the non-Jewish parts of camp be visible and feel like there's a day where they are the center of camp. And I know Judaism is an international religion. And what that means for me, at least, is recognizing that not everyone's Jewish, not everyone is Israeli or American or British, and not everyone feels that their belonging is really fully valued. And so creating that kind of space is really important. And I know camp has taken steps to do that, especially like within cabins, counselors are taking center stage there. But it's, I feel like there's still definitely work to be done.
And that's not even to mention the anti-Black racism that we've seen at camp. I don't want to go into that, but I think Ezra and Danny, you know what I'm talking about in 2022, and the way that, I mean, there is a Ashkenormativity that's very centered in camp. And I think that's true for most American Jewish communities, unfortunately, where the white Jewish identity is the norm, and those that don't fit within that are, like, getting a lot of microaggressions. Like, oh, but where are you really from? Are you really even Jewish? Like, those sort of statements and questions, which might come from a place of just, I mean, mostly do come from a place of just ignorance, can really do a lot to undermine the inclusion of the community. And that's really tough. Ezra, Danny, I know you're both also song leaders. I was wondering if you could say a little bit about, like, the role of song leaders, how you see them shaping the community. I know, Ezra, you said a little bit about it already with Tefila, but I think song leaders have a huge role to play, and I'd be remiss to not have a little discussion about that as well. Do you want to start with that, Danny?
Yeah, I think song leading, obviously, I mean, it's important to me for a lot of reasons, but like way at the beginning when I was talking about how I wouldn't really be religious if not for camp, that is purely through song leading and purely through music. If not for the music at camp, like regardless of the text and the religion within that music, I wouldn't be a very religious Jew at all. I never saw myself as a song leader growing up until I was like on the older side of camp. It's still interesting to meet people at college and be like, yeah, over the summer, I like lead religious services every day. Like that's not necessarily like how I would picture myself. But I think like my philosophy through it, which has very much been passed down to me from like the song leaders who taught me when I was a camper, is I want kids to know that tefillah can come in 1,000 formats and can be fun. Like, I think kids, just like how I did my bat mitzvah and was like, I'm out of here, I think they get sick of like the usual kind of like, here's a prayer that we haven't really discussed what it actually means, and you memorize the words at some point, but if I actually asked you what you're saying, you wouldn't know. Like, kids can sometimes get sick of that cycle. And so I love to mix up what I am teaching them and how I'm teaching them. And so like this summer, we didn't do very many tefillot in the standard format. We did some that were very discussion-based, some that were craft-based, some that were movement-based. We just kind of did whatever sparked joy. And so I think Ezra did a really beautiful job this summer of like putting a lot of intentionality and like shaping his tefillah with like an arc to it, and like a specific teaching goal. I got to work with Ezra a lot this summer, and it was like the most fun I've ever had. I think I really admire that about him. I don't think that I had quite so much intentionality to my work besides the goal of fun and enjoyment. But I think it's very important for kids to know and to learn that Judaism can be what you make it and can be what you want it to be, and that it doesn't have to be anything, and it can be anything. So,
That's
yeah.
beautiful.
Thanks, Danny. That feels good to hear. Danny also did a fantastic job. Danny and I have been song leading together for like 4 years now, and this was like the culmination of all that. It was the most fun I've had ever at camp. It was so great.
It was awesome.
I think that my song leading, when it was first presented to me, came at a really pivotal time. I really started song leading for the first time that same summer. I did that really meaningful MAPS program with Josh Berg. It kind of came into my life at a point where I was starting to really shift how I felt about Judaism and how I wanted to express it. I think that we Jews, especially in America, tend to express our Judaism through very focused outlets. Like there are some Jews who express their Judaism purely through a love for Israel. And conversely, some Jews who express their love for Judaism purely through a lens of trying to end the occupation of the Palestinian territories and being very firmly anti-Zionist, both of which, have a place in our Jewish world. There are some Jews who manifest their Judaism explicitly through arts, sometimes through prayer, whatever it may be. Music was that outlet for me. And it really showed me for the first time in my life that I can control the narrative of how my Judaism is. And I think there's no more powerful way to do that than as a lay leader, as someone who's planning religious experiences. Our people have existed for 2.5, 3,000 years, and only 100, less than 80 years of that has come in a time where there's been the state of Israel. I mean, our prayers have been around forever. The Torah has been around for as long as we've been around. And I thought that being a song leader gave me an opportunity to really personally reconnect, or honestly, for the first time, connect with that side of Judaism. But more importantly, it gave me the tools I needed to help other Jews find those ways to express their Judaism that doesn't have anything to do with politics. But also, I mean, I think that song leading just really, yeah, it just opened up my eyes to what Judaism can be. I feel very lucky that I had this like love for song leading coincide with shifting views on Israel.
Yeah, I feel music, at least for me, was always a center for Jewish communities, be it at my synagogue, at camp. And I think only more recently did I maybe understand why. Like when everyone's coming together in rhythm, in harmony, in melody, singing together, there is a very real sense of oneness, where like Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu Echad, like listen, those of you who are struggling with God, God is one. We are one. And I feel like there's a really beautiful integration there that makes music itself, when there's a lot of intention to it, feel holy. And when that's done together with like a more meaningful tefillah, when you're creating that kind of prayer space, that music can bring people together and make them feel like they not just do they belong, but they are making meaning together and making music together. And it's so beautiful to hear that both of you had such a good experience at camp through that outlet and getting to lead Jewish spaces. You get to embody Jewish leadership and be Jewish leaders in a very real, physical, musical, and spiritual way. And I think that's so special.
I've always found it really beautiful how many people I've seen first learn to play guitar at camp and then go on to become song leaders. Like, I find that such an incredibly beautiful way in which we're like able to capture the way that camp can completely shape someone's life. And like, that's really beautiful. And people get a chance to, as Jordan said, like lead in a really holistic and real way. And that's something that I think is really powerful about camp. It literally gives people a place to like grow up in and see people that they admire, and then one day take those people's place and kind of become that person that then other people admire. And honestly, it's kind of powerful. I feel like you guys understand, like, when you see the sort of people that have, frankly, the amount of social clout, like people that grew up in camp and then become like song leaders or Roche Da, you have a lot of social clout in that community. It's kind of crazy how much power you have. And it's almost made me like feel like in those positions, you really can contest the power that the directors have in a way that I wish I'd thought about more in 2022, because there was a lot of, you're able to get away with stuff in certain capacities. I mean, I did a program on colonialism with that session that year that, like, I didn't name. I mean, I basically went through, like, we have classical European colonialism. We have settler colonialism. And I didn't name that Israel is definitely settler colonial. But one of the kids afterwards was like, I wanted to say something, but I didn't want to say it in front of the whole group. And I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. I can understand the sort of tensions there. But like, and then I ended up by talking about neocolonialism and then ecological colonialism, which, Jordan, you might have issues with the way I did that. But like talking about that and connecting it to like invasive plants, and then doing a 45-minute block of just removing invasive plants around camp. Like, it's a place for like some really holistic education that can be really radical, not like necessarily from like a anti-Zionist standpoint, but just from like, you're doing really non-traditional pedagogy. Like, you're teaching things in a way that is not remotely the way you might teach something in a classroom. And there's something really cool about that. Like, I mean, I remember in CIT 2021, we did a program just like about camp as an educational space, and thinking about how, while it's a community space, it's also a space of learning in a way that is not at all traditional. And frankly, a lot of those discussions, just like a lot of the learning opportunities, are just casual discussions with your peers and taking advantage of the fact that we're all Jewish. We might as well have some of these crucial discussions amongst us as Jews while we have the chance. And I'm really grateful that a place like camp exists. And I also am very committed to the fact that I think it's a site of struggle. It's a site where we need to be having these hard discussions, and it's disappointing, to say the least, and the way that camp has stifled these free discussions and having these important conversations that, frankly, are, I mean, these people are the future of the reform movement, and if you're alienating them, you're just going to push them away. And it's really critical that we are giving them space for these discussions. I mean, clearly, Ezra, Danny, you guys have perspectives that are not necessarily embraced by the URJ as an institution. But I mean, you had Josh Berg as a Roche, then me as a CIT advisor, and we were able to show that this is Jewish. It's Jewish to ask questions. It's Jewish to wrestle with God, to wrestle with our ideas, and to not have consensus. It's two Jews, three opinions. It's really important for us to embrace these disconsensus and embrace the fact that we need to have these conversations. And it's disappointing that they've kind of stifled that this last year, and I really hope that we see that change. And obviously, it takes a lot of organizing and challenges. I wish we could have had another person on, the head song leader from this year, who I won't name, but I also love dearly, who's really an incredible person, and I believe was part of some pressure that was needed to allow them to start having like non-gender binary cabins, because traditionally they've done that a lot. But when we've had a lot of trans and gender queer campers and staff, that them coming together and demanding it was what was necessary for them to say, okay, maybe we shouldn't require everyone to fit into some gendered box in order to feel safe in their living space. And that was change that I believe was instigated by essentially community organizing, even if it wasn't necessarily an issue that they were against. It was more of just a capacity thing, probably. But it does show that like you can push these things, and it's really important for us to have our voices heard.
It's been really great hearing your perspectives, and you know, camp has shaped all of our Jewish identities and understanding of Jewish communities. And it's wonderful to hear how that's actually, you know, shaped your lives. To kind of start wrapping this up, I have a two-parter question. Maybe we could do the first part and then hear both your responses in the second part. But what is the biggest like lesson that maybe you've gotten from camp? And how do you feel camp will change to better embody, you know, the ideal Jewish community that we really want to strive towards?
I think camp has been more than consequential. It's been essential, vital. To me, having a conception of my own Jewish identity, I think the biggest lesson I've learned, honestly, is just kind of how to be a Jew, which is a very broad lesson, obviously. And it's, I'm sure that it's the lesson that camp wants us to learn. But I think I go about it in a very different way. I mean, I love camp. That's why I go back. I don't go back to camp because I hate it. I go back because I love it, you know? But I would say there's been lots of things that I have a fundamentally different perspective on than camp does that I've been feeling now for the past like 5 or 6 years. 3 of those years I've spent as a counselor or just on staff. And I think that the lesson within that is to be Jewish is to not be complacent when you feel that your voice is not heard. You know, to be Jewish is to ask questions all the time, like all the fucking time. And it's not necessarily asking questions so you can win. It's asking questions so everyone is more informed, everyone is more knowledgeable, so we can bring everyone up. I think it's really powerful that the Jews don't have a pope. You know, there's not a central figure whose authority and whose voice is final. We have so many sages and so many leaders and so many teachers that all add to this really rich textual and community-based tradition. How did they get there? They asked questions. They had really good conversations, and sometimes they had arguments. They had a lot of compromises along the way as well. And I think that that's the biggest lesson that I've learned, is that we can't make strong, vibrant, joyful Jewish spaces, especially in the diaspora, without asking those questions and without having those tough conversations. And I think that camp really, I mean, listen, for all that camp says they are about Israel, camp is the most impressive diasporous community I think I'll ever be a part of. No question about it. And, you know, that's my takeaway from it. That's not everyone's, but that's mine. So just, you know, having that knowledge that we get better, we improve, we sustain, despite there only being 14 million of us, because we ask questions and because we cared so much about the existence and the strength of our people that we look internally always. And it's been a thing that I've been going back and forth with camp for a few years now. But I'm very grateful for that process.
Yeah, I think what I'm learning is similar to Ezra's, but to quote Dan Nichols, all that is good takes work, I think is my big lesson. Like, it takes work to create camp magic. It is a lot of work to be a counselor, but it's like the best job in the world. And I think that extends to camp leadership. And like, yeah, I don't see eye to eye on them with everything that they do politically and just like on a day-to-day basis when I'm working there. But for me right now, it still feels worth it to put in that work. And I understand if that's not true for everyone, but for me, that is true. Like, I still think it's worth it to be putting in the work. And like Ezra was saying, to be having the hard conversations and pushing the boundaries.
There are very few people I know at camp who actually love every aspect of camp and how it's run and how it functions. And in fact, I've actually noticed, and this is something I think I've talked to Danny about, when you look at the people at camp who come back for a third year, which is kind of like second year is about the cutoff. When you look at people who come back for a third year, who come back for a fourth year, who are invested in the long run, none of them are those people who have nothing bad to say about camp. Everyone has something that they don't agree with fully, but we love this place and we want to empower it with the ability to change. And that's why we come back. We don't come back because we think it's perfect. We come back because we think it's imperfect. And we want to put in all of our effort and our energy to make it just marginally better day by day, camper by camper.
Wow. That's like a really beautiful way to frame it. And I'm really grateful that you said it that way. I mean, I was thinking of Yom Sport when you were saying that people have dislikes. Like, the amount of people I've met that hate Yom Sport. And, like, this goes back to, like, when we were campers. When I remember someone my second year at camp literally getting thrown out of their bed by the CITs banging on their doors and stuff. Like, there was some trauma. Like, we often say, like, old camp versus new camp and frame, like, the fire as the dividing line. Old camp was the wild, wild west out there. There was, like, people were getting traumatized on the regular. But, like, that says that, like, things change and things get better. And frankly, if there's one thing that, like, the main lesson that I've learned from camp, frankly, is, like, what could be, what life could be like if we just all lived in community with each other. There is something so profound. Danny used the word camp magic, and that's often something that people talk about. And, like, I've thought about, like, what is the core of camp magic? What is it that makes it? Because, like, frankly, when you're in community at camp, it just, you feel it. You feel like there's something special here that's worth fighting for, which I think is exactly what both of you kind of just said. I think the question of, like, what is the root of camp magic, for me, I've kind of understood it as the sort of continuity that people have at camp, where, like, you go to camp as a camper and you see certain people that have been here for years. Like, every session starts with an opening thing where, like, they'll say, like, how many people is this their second summer? And people will put their hands up and they'll go third, fourth, fifth. And eventually they'll get to 10th, 20th. And it's like, oh, this is a place that people have put their lives into. This is a place that people feel is truly special and worth spending your entire life within. And, like, that is, like, a big show of, like, I think, like, this is really core to the camp magic, but also just, like, seeing people that you grew up with that were, like, a few years older than you, like, becoming CITs and then counselors and then yourself becoming a CIT, a counselor, a Roche, and realizing that, like, people have seen you for years and years. And, like, frankly, Josh Berg was someone for that. Like, he was a few years older than me, and I'd seen him in, like, Avo Da, and then a few years later, I reconnected with him, and he was, like, had been a Roche for one of the sessions that I Roched when I was a Roche the following years. That's a lot of the word Roche in a sentence. But it's just, there's something really profound about the community that is ephemeral, but it also has a deep continuity. We only come together every summer, or, like, maybe on retreats in the weekends. I don't know if that still happens. But, like, it disappears for a great part of the year. But then you come back to it, and it's all the same people who are a year older now, a year wiser, and you can be part of that. And I think there's something truly profound about, like, what could be if that was just the way the world was. Obviously, like, the bubble of camp and time that exists is not something that we'd transform in terms of the way we'd want to bring this sort of community into the world as a whole. But, like, just a place in which you know your neighbors, a place in which you know the people around you and feel connected with them in a really deep way, just makes me feel like, as you said, Ezra, this might be the most perfect diasporist community I've been in. And I'm like, it makes me feel like this is what life could be like if we transformed our own communities to inspire the sort of love that camp inspires.
I feel like camp is the greatest lesson in community you can ever get, where it's, you know, home in a very real sense, where everyone feels a sense of belonging to place, but also to each other and to, you know, the memories that are formed there. And I'll just give camp's little care philosophy a little shout out, where it's community, acceptance, respect,
and role modeling,
and each and every one, but recognizing that everybody has a place there. And just to echo what Ezra was saying about, you know, it's not perfect, but there is so much work to be done and to make that community where each and every one, regardless of their, you know, political opinions or their ethnic heritage, can find a place, can be represented in their whole being at camp. It's so profoundly meaningful. And, you know, just to kind of turn to the second part of the question that I asked, like, maybe camp shouldn't have any, you know, dominant perspective on any political issues. Maybe it should be open to that plurality of opinions, and those Israel programs maybe should be wholly discussion based. Maybe that is what it needs to create a space where everyone can actually share their opinions and be their whole person. And I feel like that's maybe what's missing for me at camp. And the fact that camp also then lays the groundwork for people to step up and make that change, becoming an adult, you know, going through that transition of like, I'm a camper, I'm a staff member. Now, all of a sudden, what the hell, I'm in charge. And getting to then, you know, reflect on your experience and to embody that ideal community that we want to strive towards. So like, as I was saying, the second part of this question is like, Tikkun Olam, how are we going to repair camp or the world through these lessons and make about a more ideal community?
Before we jump into that, I just wanted to say that when I ended up calling one person and then it turned into like a conversation with multiple people during camp this summer, and it was really wonderful connecting to y'all while people were doing it, because frankly, I mentioned, Danny, the generational divide on Israel-Palestine politics and such, and I wasn't sure how the last year was going to affect that. And then hearing from one of the other CIT advisors that actually, no, there was even more, like everyone, I heard the language they used was that basically everyone either is like very pro-Palestine or just kind of doesn't really care. That inspired a lot of confidence in like the capability of this generational divide. Like, I really thought this was going to push people towards Zionism because, like, yeah, I mean, the sense of fear is what fuels Zionist politics in a real way. But the fact that people doubled down and like, that was just really inspiring to me because it makes me feel how resilient this movement is and how this isn't something that's going to just change on a dime. This is something that is going to make change in the camp community in the long run, whether or not they want it to. And if not, who knows what's going to happen of camp? It could just break.
Yeah, I think that camp has all the tools in place they need to kind of open up this dialogue. I think that's the biggest way that camp needs to change on this issue, at least. Listen, I have been working at camp now for 3 years, and my relationship with Israel and Zionism continues to change. Like, I'm not the same place now as I was a year ago or 4 years ago, as I'm sure most of us aren't. But I've never felt less accepted because of it. I think for all that there is to be improved upon when it comes to how camp approaches Israel, you will never be left out of anything or feel lesser than for espousing your beliefs. You might not always be given the time of day you think that you deserve, but there are people at camp, tons of people at camp, who struggle with Zionism, who struggle with Israel, yet they're still given job contracts, they're still praised for their hard work. You know, it's a Jewish camp, fundamentally. It's not an Israel camp, it's a Jewish camp. And listen, camp is in a way better place out than they were 10 years ago when it comes to dialogue and nuance about this topic. It's a really hard issue for any Jewish institution to come around on. But I think that camp is making good progress. I think that, yeah, they have the people in place they need to facilitate these conversations and to have these conversations. It's at this point about a willingness to really hear people and, more importantly, to act on those ideas. But again, I've never felt like I've been like discriminated against or anything for my ideals at camp. I love this place, even if we don't see eye to eye on Israel stuff. And that's how all Jewish communities should be. You should be able to walk into any synagogue, into any Jewish space in the world, and not have to worry about your politics or their politics. They should see you as a Jew. And that's all that should matter. And I think that, to camp's credit, they do it quite well.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Ezra said. I think in terms of next steps, I think they just need to like commit to just continuing to try. Like, we kind of talked about like how we've seen Israel programming shift over the years. Like, I've seen them try so many things. Some stick a lot better than others, some blow up, some don't. But I think just a willingness to continue trying is the best way. And I also think that they have that. So as long as they stick to it, I think there could be a bright future. Especially, it was really inspiring to see my campers this summer who are going to be staff from here on out. They had a very wide range of opinions and they were very civil with each other. And I witnessed some really beautiful conversations that they had all on their own across political lines. And I think that's very promising for the future. So I think as long as they keep trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm really inspired hearing about the CIT class of this past summer. I am really optimistic about the change that they're going to bring to camp. And like, yeah, as you say, there needs to be a willingness. And sadly, like, the URJ as a whole needs to embrace this willingness, because even if the directors themselves have expressed willingness to at least have these conversations with those that the community members that want to have these conversations, they have their arms tied as long as the URJ has its own stance. And I think it's really important that we build the pressure all across the board at camp, of course, but in our own synagogues, in our own, all the URJ institutions, and of course in the other Jewish community institutions that espouse the dominant narratives that they espouse.
Yeah, I also just wanted to plug the program that I was a part of this summer called All the Dots, all service-based. And we do a fundraiser every year. Our goal is $10,000. Last I checked, I think we're about $200 short. So please donate to that if you can. We have some really awesome causes that we've picked out, diversified what we're contributing to. But yeah, I can send you a link, Ben, after.
Do you want to say what those causes are? And we're happy to put the link in the description.
Yeah. Okay. Let me try to remember off the top of my head. One of the causes is veteran support and support for formerly unhoused people. Another cause is like humanitarian efforts, really focusing on children impacted by wars, especially. And the third is an ecological cause focusing on forest restoration. I believe it's specifically redwood restoration. So all really incredible causes. I'll send you the link. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and that will be in the description. Ezra, Danny, it's been an absolute pleasure connecting with you guys. I feel so privileged to have been your CIT advisor and to be able to watch you grow up and become the lovely Jewish adults that you've become. I was sad I wasn't able to come this summer. I just was very busy with the multiple jobs that I'm working and such. But hopefully I'll get to come back when you guys are working there next year, hopefully, if you are planning to do so. Ezra, I see you shaking your head. Danny, I see you nodding your head. Well, frankly, I want to use the word Lador of Adorable, because I was your CIT advisor, Danny. I wasn't your Avodah advisor, Ezra. I actually was hired to be your Avodah advisor, but then COVID happened and it was moved on to Zoom, and I didn't really want to do Zoom camp. But I'm really feel blessed to be connected with you guys. You guys are doing such incredible work, and I'm excited to be able to stay in touch with you guys. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us. We are carrying the stories of the ones who came before. What stories will be told of us when we are here no more? We commit ourselves to action. It brings meaning to our days. Aleinu l'shabeach. It's time to live our praise. It's up to us to own the vision. We are an answer to a call. It's up to us to live the words we speak for the benefit of all. It's up to us to bow down deeply. There's a broken world to raise. Aleinu l'shaveach. It's time to live our praise. Aleinu l'shaveach. It's time to live.